At last, my sampler is ready to eat. Oh, Nexium, you purple king of reflux, prepare to be tasted. And you, Crestor, the color of a desert rose, lower my cholesterol. And what's this, my friend and ally, Zithromax? Aim your fuchsia spear at an infection that I don't have. I'm so happy, I feel a little crazy. Come to me, Seroquel, and banish my psychosis.
Kyone, what are you doing?
I'm taking prescription medicine, Greg. The ultimate American pastime.
Do you even have a specific illness?
No. Well, my feet have been really cold lately, and my elbow kind of hurts, and I eat emotionally, and I have sex dreams about the Taco Bell crunch wrap, and I also may be coming down with a cold, so.
None of those things are addressed by those medications.
Of course they're not, but these pills are so pretty, and they're my right as an American.
You might have better luck with Chinese medicine, which concentrates more on the functions of the body and the energy that flows through its channels called meridians.
Okay, now you're sounding crazy. Let me ask you a question, Greg. If this Chinese medicine is so great, why are there no commercials for it? Where are the happy people with the golden retriever walking down the beach while a calm voice lists the hundreds of side effects?
You're kind of making my point for me.
No, I'm not, Greg, because making someone's point for them is a known side effect of a certain drug I happen to not be taking.
Yeah, but you don't even know anymore whether you feel sick or you're just having side effects from drugs you already take.
And that's the way I like it, Greg. So why don't I have a little Symbicort while you eat some General Tso's statin? Today on the show, Chinese medicine, before and after the Nobel Prize. And now he claims to practice self-cupping, Colin McEnroe.
But that's a very private thing. I don't really like to talk about my self-cupping. All right. So, yeah, we're going to talk about traditional Chinese medicine today. And traditional Chinese medicine, I mentioned before the news, in some ways, I think the first time a lot of people in the U.S. heard about it might have been in 1971 when James Rustin had acute appendicitis. He was probably the most famous writer for the New York Times at that moment. He was in what was then called in the New York Times Peking, and he had acute appendicitis, and he was treated at the so-called the Anti-Imperialist Hospital. And he was treated in a way that combined Western medicine with some traditional Chinese medicine. Traditional Chinese medicine didn't do so well during the Maoist revolution, but it was still there. It was still something that doctors turned to. So Rustin described things that I'm pretty sure Americans had never heard about at that time. And since then, some of the elements of that have become pretty normative. I mean, acupuncture is just kind of, if you haven't at least been offered acupuncture, you should get out more. I mean, acupuncture has become pretty standard in a lot of settings. But there are other aspects of traditional Chinese medicine, sometimes called TCM, that are a little bit more exotic to people or just unknown to people. And so I was personally very surprised to see the Nobel Prize go to one small branch of Chinese medicine. Still, that's kind of, you know, I mean, it's really kind of revolutionary in a different way for something like that to happen, for the Nobel Prize in medicine and physiology to go to any practitioner of or anyone using traditional Chinese medicine. It made me wonder kind of, first of all, what that meant for the field, and also made me feel like maybe we should do a show just introducing you to some of the other elements of TCM. So here in the studio with us, we have David McCollum. He's a licensed acupuncturist and a practitioner of holistic healing medicines at the Qi Healing Center in Canton. He's a graduate of Nanjing University of Traditional Chinese Medicine in China. And Mary Guerrera is a professor of family medicine and director of integrative medicine in the Department of Family Medicine at UConn Medical School. Michael Kelly is a cancer survivor who has benefited from Chinese medicine. You'll be meeting other people, too, as the show goes along. If you have your own questions, you can call us at 860-275-7266, or your own comments. You can use the same line for questions and comments, 860-275-7266. You may also tweet us at WNPR Colin. David McCollum, I'm going to kind of ask you to get us started here. And actually, I'd like you to begin by just telling us the story. We've met before. I've actually been treated by David McCollum. I should say that. Tell us the story of your own education here. I mean, what even impelled you? What made you want to go to China and study traditional Chinese medicine?
Well, I consider that to be a series of very fortunate accidents. Mm. And the first one was actually before I was even thinking about career choices. And I had a very terrible back injury. It's playing football as a 15-year-old boy in high school and was tackled from behind. And two-hand touch always turns into some traumatic event when you put boys on the field. But we broke some bones in the spine, and I had numbness and flat-boarded to the hospital, to which my parents said, is there anything other than putting a steel rod in my son's spine? Fortunately, the answer was, well, maybe let's give it a try and let's see. And that inspired me to seek out some physical therapy, which I was thinking I was pretty smart at that age of 15. I said, I'll fire my therapist and rehab this myself. And that kind of pointed me in a direction that was very non-conventional. And when I was then done with high school and I discovered massage therapy and got in tune with a few things that I really thought were very much in line with my philosophy of healing, and I found I hit some limits. I wanted to explore more, and I thought, well, I think maybe I'll get into osteopathic medicine. So I did some pre-medical work, and I interviewed a few docs who were out in practice, and I got a very strong suspicion that this was not the direction I wanted. There seemed to be quite a concern about insurance and delivering care, and it didn't really line up for me. So out of desperation and frustration, I talked to a friend who said there might be a school in Connecticut. And I said, well, that sounds great. Where? He didn't know, and he pointed me down to the shore in Stamford. I called randomly a Chinese acupuncturist in the phone book, and he said, well, how about you talk to Dr. Scher, and he's the guy. So I did. And that led me to a whole wonderful interview, which consisted of me standing about 20 feet away from this master. And he finally said, I will teach you acupuncture, but first you learn Qigong and these other methods. And I just went along with it. We ended up in China, and I did my clinical residency there. And this was an integrative hospital where we were practicing Western medicine plus all of this traditional Chinese medicine.
How long were you in China doing that?
3 years. And even I didn't really believe it, Colin, even though I was learning the studies and the practices. And I kind of bought in to the level of I thought this was really fantastic, but it still something didn't quite make sense to me. And it was one clinical experience I had in the hospital in China that really turned me around, and that was a patient came in. He had this terrible back spasm, and I touched his back. It was hard as nails. He could barely breathe, and everything inside me said I should probably try to release this. And instead, I listened to my Chinese teachers, and they said, use this point behind the knees. And I thought to myself, well, I'll try, but I think I'll have to go back and release this spasm. And when I did, I checked back, and it was gone. I didn't have an explanation other than the Chinese one, that qi moved through these channels, and I started to believe it. I tested that theory about 25 times that week, and now I pretty much accept that as something.
I want to come back to that and to what you just talked about, because some of those terms, qi and meridians, won't be entirely familiar to our entire audience. But Mary, I feel as though even 10 years ago, certainly 15 years ago, you wouldn't be sitting here on this show. I mean, not somebody from UConn School of Medicine would not be sitting on a show about traditional Chinese medicine. And there are some people probably listening to this show right now thinking, you know what? Western medicine is really great. It's like better than anything else. We've got everything we need. Why would we even be having a conversation about something like this? So tell us where you see it fitting into modern Western medicine.
Sure, Colin. Actually, I probably would be sitting here about 15 years ago. I'm kind of a unique family physician. Mm-hmm. And being a family physician, I look at the whole person, body, mind, spirit, in the context of their family, their community, the environment. So being drawn to family medicine when I was training in med school, I was pretty open-minded to what is healing? How do we know what we know? So I was very intrigued by different ways of healing, different ways of knowing, and that led me on a journey towards exploring things that were then called holistic or alternative medicine, which is now kind of transformed to complementary, and probably the more appropriate word is integrative medicine, integrative health. I agree that over the last 20 years or so, last two decades, we've seen a huge shift in awareness of the public and awareness of the medical community that people, number one, are trying these therapies, and number two, that we do need more research and understanding about this. We also right now have sort of an epidemic of chronic pain, and we really are at a loss of having appropriate therapies in conventional mainstream medicine for that. We have a huge use of opioid and narcotics that are really a big problem. And I think people are seeking other ways, and acupuncture is, as you said, out in the community, a lot of more acupuncturists. It has safety, it has efficacy when done by an appropriately trained practitioner. And it really opens up doors and options. There's more and more research, and this has been an important dimension of academic medicine and conventional allopathic medicine looking at these areas. Is there research? Is it safe? Is it effective? And I've seen a lot more research coming along on that topic.
As we go along here today, you're going to hear some stories from people who have benefited in very specific ways from this. But David, I want to come back to you for a second. So, because I think what you said is very important and very interesting to me, that there's Americans have a little bit of a tendency to separate one thing out, right? And mm-hmm. so there are – I mean, really, you can't swing a cat with – that's a bad image. But you can't do anything without running into somebody who's had acupuncture these days. But Americans separate that out. And the first person of any kind of authority that you talked to about this said – yes, I'll teach you acupuncture, but you need to learn some other things first. You really need to learn the systems that are represented by and used by and exploited by acupuncture. You have to learn what all that is. So, I mean, obviously we have a finite amount of time as opposed to your years of study, but what were they talking about?
Well, at the time, I didn't even know. I just had this inner sense that maybe I should trust this gentleman. He seemed to know what he was talking about. But it was understanding well enough the system. And in this case, I'm talking about that traditional Chinese medical system, which uses some very metaphorical language. We talk about wind, for example, as a metaphor to describe many neurologic findings. So what the ancient Chinese person and the development of medicine came to conclusion about was that the body was interrelated in very specific ways. They didn't have the modern vernacular to describe it as we would describe it, but the interactions nonetheless made sense clinically. If you casually observe this concept of qi, for example, you may mistake it for a single thing. You may mistake it for this invisible something that is a non-something. But when you think about that concept of qi and you go back to its roots, the Chinese were really talking about a metaphor to describe all of the unseen phenomenon. So in the early days, nobody knew why the heart beat or why blood circulated through the veins and arteries. But the Chinese said, well, there must be this invisible force doing it. It didn't make it any less valid of describing it as this qi or the osmotic pressure and vascular contractions that move blood and circulation around. But the concepts, when you go deep enough, they actually explain many interactions that we don't yet have good explanation for. So give you a clinical example. A patient often will come with a headache, a migraine headache. And I often will tell them straight away, I can never treat a migraine headache, but I can treat why you have a headache. And it's the why you have, so I feel for muscle tension. The Chinese describe that muscle tension as a stagnation or a blockage of energy moving in a specific area or region. So it gives us a nomenclature to understand then how to apply a clinical strategy. The language is rich with all of these interactions, and they are very confusing. And to be honest, it took me many years to really make sense of how it all fit together to actually use it clinically.
We're going to talk to some people, as I say, who've benefited from this. And Michael, you are one of those people. Like a lot of people, I think these days you wind up benefiting from both things, from conventional modern Western medicine. But then that didn't solve all your problems. So quickly share with us your story. How did you find your way to the doorstep of traditional Chinese medicine?
Well, I sought David out basically because I had a really constant, relentless back pain That was the result of having a cystoscopy performed. And, you know, when you're told that you have cancer, it's kind of mind-numbing. So you're not able to put together all of the pieces that you might normally do. And so I knew that it was my back was giving me a lot of pain, but I couldn't put it together with the cystoscopy. Of course, it turned out that it was an infection, but it took David to tell me that after I had gone to my internist, my urologist, my oncologist, my gastroenterologist, and they all told me it wasn't connected. David said, of course, it was. so that's why I went. I didn't think that David could really do much about my cancer or my underlying disease, which was Crohn's. But actually, it turned out, in my case anyway, that David's treatments and acupuncture did solve all my problems.
Wow, that's quite a testimony. Well, I mean, Mary, help us understand this, because I can guarantee you there are people listening right now who are listening with great skepticism. They're listening with skepticism to the description that David gave and to the story that Michael just told. So as a scientific person, how would it make sense that all kinds of oncologists and other diagnosticians would miss something like that, but Chinese medicine would get at it somehow?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that when we think about what David described as qi, or this phenomenon, if I'd like to just remind us that in conventional mainstream medicine, we use energy, we measure energy in many ways. For example, when you have an EKG electrocardiogram done, we're measuring the electrical conductance of the heart. When you have an EEG, an encephalogram done looking at brain waves, you're measuring the electrical activity of the brain. And other devices like a TENS unit, which is often used to heal bones or help pain. So we already use energy, not only therapeutic but diagnostically. So the body has energy, and the body has both electromagnetic fields. And this whole area of science that's emerging in biomagnetism is a fascinating field, and I'd encourage people to look into that because there's a lot of very interesting research being done studying energy in the body. So I think that in medicine, we are moving more and more towards team-based care and better communication among some of the specialists. As a family physician, most family physicians and primary care physicians, both general internists and general pediatricians, look at the whole person in the context of their entire being and work with specialists. I think sometimes, you know, we can get siloed in our disciplines and maybe not think holistically or whole personally. So I think that when a person has explored the various conventional approaches to healing, and it looks like there's more that might be able to be helped, I think, again, looking outside of the mainstream area, and so how can we collaborate? So I think really one of the most important take-home points today is that interdisciplinary team care, and not only between different physicians and health professionals like doctors and nurses and physiotherapists and pharmacists. That's a growing and important area right now in both medical education and clinical practice. But expanding that circle of interdisciplinary team care, how can we best help the patient in their health and healing, can include people like acupuncturists, traditional trained physicians and practitioners, naturopaths, many of the folks in our community, particularly here in Connecticut, where many people are licensed and certified, to reach out and to really build bridges for increased dialogue and collaborate for optimal health and healing.
And David, I'm also assuming that you're not siloed either, that if I've got angina, if I've got prostate cancer, you're not going to suggest that I turn my back on Western medicine.
No, of course not. And I think the real strength is being able to identify those signs before they're at a critical in many times what in modern medicine we call treatable conditions. So that subacute or chronic state is where we can even determine things before many of the conventional testing can even find. And I think that's a big strength. But we always integrate. And I think Mary said it very well, this word of integration. And I feel very strongly about that. There are strengths in many approaches. And I often see when you combine those multiple disciplines together, we see the best results for patients.
I want to go to the phones here in just a second. Janice is calling in from Stonington, also had an experience not unlike Michael's. But Michael, in your own words, I mean, okay, so you were a cancer survivor. You had pain after the cancer related to an infection. You have Crohn's disease, which is a very serious condition in and of itself. So, I mean, in your own words, what do you think traditional Chinese medicine did for you?
I think that it allowed me to allow my body to actually do the healing. I think what David was able to do was, again, with Western medicine, the diagnosis is there, and there seems to be little time or real concern for the emotional state of the patient. There's too much clinical data and too much, I guess it's 400 clicks is what I've heard. That's what the average emergency room doctor does a day on a computer. So that doesn't leave a lot of time for interaction with the patient. And David was able to, through acupuncture and through his talents and his approach, was able to get me to relax enough mentally so that I could then give the body permission to start healing itself. And so he was the first one to suggest stop eating gluten. Mm-hmm. And after having Crohn's for 30 years, nobody had ever said that to me. As soon as I stopped that and changed my diet, my whole life changed. I mean, my energy came back. A number of different things happened in my life that all had to be tied to the treatments.
Let me grab a call here from a somewhat similar story, I think, from Janice in Stonington. Hi, Janice. You're on the air.
Hi, Colin. I've had very successful experiences with TCM for the past 3 years. Specifically, two was a lump in my breast and also severe scoliosis. So about 3 years ago, by the way, I have an OBGYN. I have two naturopathic physicians that specialize in women's medicine. And now I have Dr. Wu out of West Hartford. Now, I couldn't find anything down in Stonington or I'm right next to Rhode Island. Couldn't find anything, anybody that was a TCM. So basically, I had a sonography instead of mammography because that would detect angiogenesis, which would be all those little nice little blood vessels and things like that. So I had that done. And the compound that he had, because he's also a third-generation herbalist, within approximately 4 months, I had another thermogram done, and there was no trace of it. I also have been doing Qigong instruction. Sometimes I have to do a lot at home just because 65 miles to West Hartford from Stonington is a drag for the scoliosis, along with, nobody mentioned yet, Twinai massage. Mm-hmm. For the faint of a heart, you know, but it works extremely well with me. And my background is consulting and research, one out of a department for MIT, so I researched all the compounds that I was taking that time for the lump. And one of them actually is going to be in the first Chinese herbal patented medicine that's already completed phase two. So there's lots of trials, clinical trials that are going on, but there'll be the first patented Chinese herbal medicine soon in the United States.
Well, thanks for that story. We're going to take a break in just a second. But Mary, you know, I'm going to get emails. Like, I already know I'm going to get emails. And some of the emails are going to say stuff like, this is not really tested as well as it should be. And there are people offering herbal compounds out there that, you know, might be placebos, might be something worse than placebos, might actually be deleterious to some people. It's just not a system that we can say with the same amount of confidence we might ascribe to the American medical system. It's not a system we can say you can absolutely trust this. It's all going to work out fine. Maybe if you're the kind of person Janice is and you do a lot of your own research and make sure you're on a better footing. So what do I say to all the emails that I'm going to get saying, you're irresponsible, Colin, for putting this show on the air about all this stuff that people don't really understand all that well?
Well, that's a great question, Colin, and I think it's always safety first. And I think anyone who's a practitioner who's truly interested in health and healing is always going to put the patient's health and safety first. And so it's an excellent question. We know from survey data that about 30 to 40% of people in the United States use some form of complementary and alternative medicine, and a very large number of them are using over-the-counter supplements and botanicals and other, let's say, non-prescription, non-pharmacotherapy agents. And many of these, as you mentioned, we don't know if they're necessarily quality tested. Some may be. It's very confusing. The FDA hasn't really monitored this whole area, so it's something that you really need to be aware of. So that said, it's important, number one, to discuss this with your physician or health professional. I think it's very important. We teach our medical students at UConn Medical School about asking patients not only about prescription medications, but also supplements and botanicals and other types of health and healing practices that and practitioners they may see. It's important for the primary physician and all your physicians to know about this to help guide that. And I would say, like, talk to your physicians, talk to your legislators. Let's get this moving so that we can have more quality control. More importantly, if you are going to pursue this and you're interested, is to find a qualified practitioner. Herbal medicine, I have great respect for it. It has a long tradition. There's many benefits that may be forthcoming from this. And you need to know, you need to find a practitioner that's well-trained and really knows this. Now, throw in that the person may be on a prescription medication. Most people these days are on many medications, and we don't really know what more than two or three of them are doing in your body. And then if you throw in a supplement and a botanical, that becomes more complex. So, yes, we need more research. We need more safety and quality control of the actual products. And, you know, hopefully our pharmacy people can be helping us with this. And, you know, the mainstream medical community can work together and bridge this with herbalists and botanical people.
And presumably the fact that one branch of this did just get a Nobel Prize in medicine mm-hmm. may spur that along a little bit. All right. Let's take a little break here. We're talking about traditional Chinese medicine. We're going to talk very specifically about acupuncture when we come back.
Lost my Chinese medicine.
All right, welcome back. This is our show about traditional Chinese medicine. As I said, one branch of it won a Nobel Prize in medicine and physiology just a few weeks ago, which kind of got me thinking, and maybe it's time to sort of talk a little bit more specifically about the whole discipline, the whole tradition. So we've been doing that with guests in studio, David McCollum, who's a licensed acupuncturist and practitioner of holistic healing methods at the Qi Healing Center in Canton, Mary Guerrero, who's a professor of family medicine with UConn Medical School, Michael Kelly, a cancer survivor who has benefited from Chinese medicine. We're going to talk about acupuncture very specifically right now and add to the conversation Vitaly Napadau, who is an associate professor at the Martinez Center for Biomedical Imaging at Massachusetts General Hospital at Harvard Medical School, also president of the Society for Acupuncture Research. Before we talk to Vitaly Napadau, David, I'm going to ask you, I mean, it seems to me that acupuncture is kind of, for most people, if there's going to be sort of a gateway moment towards TCM, it's probably going to be acupuncture. And it's also kind of where the rubber meets the road here a little bit in terms of the conversation that's gone on between the scientific community and the TCM or the Western scientific community and the TCM community. So maybe it would be helpful to start with like a 60-second description of how acupuncture in TCM theory, how it works. What does it do?
Well, okay, and this is where we have to fully embrace this concept of the body's innate wisdom. And I'm going to first give you my explanation, which is based on what I see day in and day out, and then I'll wrap you back around to the traditional model. And that is, I really feel that we are delivering a signal, a message, a stimulus that then is received, translated. And perhaps Dr. Vitaly can talk about how that happens from the brain way. But that message then causes reaction throughout the whole system. And I think the confusing part is that it can be multiple things are changing. So, for example, one of my clinical tests is after I do an acupuncture, I look for an immediacy of change. And if I don't see that, I assume that either I haven't applied the right stimulation, I may have missed something, and I use that to inform an adjustment to my treatment. But I'm expecting, because the body is so regular in its response. The old Chinese way is to think about every point that we stimulate has a connection through this interconnected highway system of energy flow. And when you stimulate one point far away from the location of problem, there's a current in changing. And remember, these are metaphors. And these currents of changing and moving energy help the body to readjust, recalibrate, and find balance again.
So, Vitaly Napido, I'm going to introduce you to this conversation now, too. And I think, I mean, just from my own, you know, reading of the literature, which is obviously inadequate for this conversation, but it seemed to me that what I was reading was that, you know, there are different schools of thought in the scientific community about how this works, about whether it works, but you could kind of break it out into maybe four different positions. There's a group of people who basically say, this doesn't work, it doesn't do anything, it's nothing, basically. There's a group of people who say, it works probably mainly as a placebo. There's another group of people who say, it works, but not the way that David just described. It works in some other way. It doesn't work on meridians and qi, but it works in terms of stimulating some other possible hormonal process of the body. And then there are people who basically believe it works pretty much the way David just described and the way for centuries practitioners of TCM have believed that it works. I don't know whether I just stated all that correctly, but how do you start testing this? How do you start testing it in a way that will be satisfactory to the kinds of standards and tests that are set by the Western scientific canon?
Well, yes, this is an excellent question. And first of all, I just want to thank you for looping me into this discussion and this conversation. I think it's really a fascinating field. And in my research with neuroimaging, I've been able to try to understand brain activity and brain response to acupuncture. That's kind of what I do. And you're right, it's very polarizing. There's people on opposite sides of the spectrum and some people that, you know, believe that this is worthless and then some people that, you know, believe that it's going to, you know, be the panacea for all of our ills. And I think the truth is probably somewhere in between. And there's actually, I think people will be surprised to hear that there's actually been a lot of research that has been done on acupuncture from the standpoint of integrative medicine or complementary alternative medicine. Acupuncture probably has the most research behind it that dates back really to the 1950s and 1960s in China. So, and including the Tu Youyou, who's the person who was awarded the Nobel Prize, began at those times. And I think we've learned a lot, really, about acupuncture and about how it might function, but we haven't sort of definitively located the mechanism. And in my view, that might be because there isn't a mechanism. There are mechanisms, and I think the way that acupuncture might be beneficial for something like chronic pain might be a very different mechanism by which it might be beneficial for something like Parkinson's disease. And we know that acupuncture affects endorphin levels in the brain. We know that it also modulates dopamine levels in the brain. And so some of these physiological responses might be specific and important for different disorders.
I have so many zillions and zillions of questions, but maybe, Mary, I'll just swing over to you for a second. One thing that we can say, one thing that I think Western medicine has accepted, although I'm old enough to remember when this really was kind of a pushing the envelope idea, is the mind-body connection, right? I mean, I don't know. When I was a kid, obviously there were people who said it's all in your head. There were terms like psychosomatic and things like that. But the notion that our minds and our bodies were intimately connected and that notion anyway really wasn't entirely embraced. Now, I'm going to ask Vitaly some very specific questions, but to me, that seems to be part of the conversation we're having right now about acupuncture.
Well, that's really important, the mind-body connection. And I think the amazing research that is coming forth now, I mean, the neuroscience, the fields of neuroscience and neuroimaging is just amazing. We are seeing mindfulness come onto the scene very much so. There's more and more studies about the mind-body connection and how mindfulness and meditative practices, some of that championed through the Dalai Lama's research with Olympic meditators, and we're seeing through brain imaging how actually the neuroplasticity and the effects of actually growing parts of your brain through repeated practice and contemplative practices seems to be helping. So there's this ancient wisdom and practice that we are now able to understand more with our sort of modern science and technology. And I think as people see this research coming forth and actually seeing the studies and seeing the outcomes of what continued mindfulness or meditative practices, this mind-body connection can do for stress and health and healing, I think more and more people are realizing this is really important.
So, Vitaly, I'm interested to know. I mean, David has talked about qi and some of the other aspects of TCM as, in some ways, kind of a metaphor. As you begin to study it using neuroimaging, you may find the brain and the body responding to acupuncture in ways that maybe don't fit the strictest traditional understanding of Chinese understanding of how this works. So, I mean, in some ways, I mean, if you're learning things about, you know, serotonin or dopamine or anything like that, that might be kind of different from how TCM traditionally understood that acupuncture works. Are these two things compatible, the kind of research that you do and the traditional understanding?
Right. So, you know, A few years ago, Stephen Birch introduced this concept of a system of correspondences, where we in Chinese medicine there's talk about qi and yin and yang, and meridians, and these things were sort of first of all they're translated from the Chinese, and so the translations are not necessarily correct in the way that we conceive of them, and the whole translation of qi as energy may or may not be correct. But also, you know, what I tell a lot of people is we just don't have a qi meter. I have no way of measuring qi because we don't know exactly what it is. And so if I have no way of measuring it, then from a scientific research point of view, it's very difficult to study it. But we do have nice tools for measuring things like brain activity and blood response, blood flow response, both peripherally and centrally. And so these are the tools that we have. And so until we can really identify what qi might be and have something like a qi meter that can be used in research, I think it's difficult to look at the underpinnings of Chinese medicine beyond a philosophical construct. But that doesn't mean that they are somehow, you know, inaccurate in some philosophical metaphysical worldview.
And I mean, David, does TCM lend itself to the kind of quantification that maybe science wants? In other words, I'm sure you're very interested in the neuroimaging stuff, but it may also need to fit into a different kind of narrative in terms of what traditional Chinese medicine is. Does that make any sense, what I'm saying?
I think so, and I would love to see that research continue, because in a dreamy future, I would love to see this all integrate seamlessly, where we wouldn't even have to use things like acupuncture needles, and we just possibly pass through a brain scanner and adjust the body in such a way that we don't have any illness. Until then, though, I have to rely on the parts and pieces that do work really well for my patients. And I think I'll share a story, and this is one of just practicality. And so I love things that work, and at this point, I'm not even so concerned as to why they work or how you want to describe they work. So this one's near and dear, the birth of my daughter. I used a very novel treatment of acupuncture through the birth process for pain management and to speed up the delivery. And boy, this was 1 hour and 13 minute sprint, and my little daughter Jillian was born. And the striking part of that story was that my wife, sitting on the bench at the hospital waiting for the nurse, and she's very comfortable, and the nurse asked her, "Are you in pain?" And she says, "Oh, no, maybe 1-2 out of 10. And the nurse does a pelvic exam. She's 8.5 centimeters dilated and ready to give birth. So those kind of firsthand experiences are very, very powerful reinforcements to me I have thousands of patients who have the similar experiences. So I would love to have a very satisfactory explanation that meets from all perspectives. But until then, I'm very satisfied with having patients receive the benefit.
You know, Vitaly Napido, I'm sure you have 100 questions you want answered through your research, 100 questions about acupuncture and the related systems of the body. Is there one big question? Is there one grand unified question that you really want to answer through your research?
Well, I think yes. I mean, I think one important direction to go in is to go towards more clinical relevance in our research. So I think, you know, where the field started was simply taking healthy adults, healthy individuals, and taking a needle, inserting the needle, and manipulating or twisting the needle, and seeing where in the brain it lights up. So kind of a poke and look approach. And you know, as time went on, natural question that's asked is, what is the relevance of this physiological response to some sort of clinical outcomes? And so I think we've become more and more interested in, first of all, studying patient populations, but also looking at sort of the ecological validity of acupuncture, so the natural way that it's practiced, which is not necessarily through a single needle and a single treatment, but over a course of treatment, over multiple weeks, and seeing how neuroplasticity evolves over time. And so the brain, we know, changes when people are in chronic pain. And so there's a neuroplastic response, a maladaptive one. And then after acupuncture therapy, after a course of acupuncture therapy, can this plasticity be reversed? And so these are kind of the questions that are bouncing around in my head and in other researchers as well as we go and test this further.
All right. We're going to stop the conversation there and take a break. We'll come back. This show is flying by, but we'll do our best.
Acupuncture.
Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me, Kyone Wolf. Our interns are Nate Gagnon and Zachary LaSala. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. The part of Bill Curry was played by Mia Farrow. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff snorting dried seahorse, visit our website, WNPR.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, the literary voice of Eastern Connecticut. And now, back to Colin.
All right. We're talking about traditional Chinese medicine. If I tell you the names of all the guests and all their titles, the show will be over. So I'm going to sort of speed by that. I do want to say we're getting an awful lot of Twitter and email action. A lot of people just talking about how, in fact, working with a practitioner like David McCallum is with us or somebody else, they're telling basically a very similar story to what Michael said, that it somehow or other allowed their body to heal for the first time, and also saying that a lot of times they got asked questions that no sort of canonical Western medicine practitioner had asked them before, questions about really where their hip pain came from or whatever. So very interesting stuff. We'll try to share as much of it as we can in any way that we can, but if you go on the WNPR Colin Twitter account, you probably see a little bit of it as well. And then another thing, David, that I just wanted to quickly say is that I was your patient for a while, and at no point did you offer me any Chinese herbs, and I'm assuming, or any herbs of any kind, and I'm assuming that's because I was also taking some conventional medications.
Well, that's correct, and I always look at that as our first tier, and the simple fact is we don't know all of the interactions. Sometimes it could be a very simple thing, like prescribing something like a cinnamon for a diabetic patient, because we do have enough evidence through a modern lens to say the cinnamon is great at growing a capillary response, and it's been shown to lower blood sugars and so on. But then when we look at it from a comprehensive TCM model, we can really work well within that one model. But then when we start combining, we're into a place that historically we don't have any real good safety guidelines. And
All right. So we've got zillions of calls here. I'm going to apologize in advance for the fact that we're not going to get to a lot of them. But we do want to talk to Elizabeth. This is Elizabeth Current, who's calling up. She is the owner of Current Public Relations. She wants to share a story of how she benefited from acupuncture for pain and I think also for another deeper, more personal kind of trauma from what I can tell. Elizabeth, very quickly, sketch out your story for us.
Yes, thank you for having me on your show. And by the way, it's Elizabeth Carreri.
Oh,
but,
sorry.
22 Misread years that. Ago, I was shot by my former husband on my right shoulder blade area. And after recovery in the hospital, I became an activist in speaking against domestic violence. As the years progressed, the pain from the shooting increased pretty bad. On a scale from 1 to 10, I would say, it was sometimes 10 to 15. So it gives you an idea of how much pain I was going through. I did, I sought the help of conventional health care providers, visiting a number of doctors and physical therapists, as well as taking prescribed drugs like Darvocet and Vicodin, with absolutely no decrease to my pain. And additionally, the red tape I had to deal with in trying to obtain medical insurance approval for the treatment was mind-boggling and often just a waste of my time. And many of my days were spent in severe pain at home, crying and in darkness in my room because even the light of day caused me additional pain. A few years ago, while living in California, my current husband, who's, by the way, a very wonderful husband now, suggested that I try seeing an acupuncturist. And we found a local California acupuncturist, Dr. Mao. And from then, we moved to Connecticut. And that was about a little bit over 2 years ago. My first priority was to find a good acupuncturist. And with the help of Dr. Mao, he highly suggested, after reading the reviews and reading a little bit of background of David, without hesitation, Dr. Mao advised us to choose David McCollum because he had been trained in China. And he believed this is a very important, and not only because David has been taught the trade correctly, but has also learned the correct philosophy of healing through acupuncture.
So I apologize for doing this to you, but we're almost out of time. So, okay. So give us a sense of how this worked out for you.
Oh, my gosh. The pain is gone. Absolutely gone, and I felt results within the first four visits, and only found relief actually through acupuncture from Dr. Mao, and then David actually cured the problem.
We are almost out of time here, but in a minute or so or less, Mary, one of the things that you said during the break that I thought was really interesting is that how all of these treatments are incredibly personal, and one of the things that makes research difficult is you'd have to find another person who was a gunshot survivor who had a lot of other things that were very similar to Elizabeth Carreri's story. I mean, every patient is a very personal, tailored thing, right?
This is true, and I think this is one of the obstacles to doing Western approach research, and I think this does bring us to the importance, and NIH, National Institutes of Health, has even mentioned how we really do need to explore other ways of doing research. For example, outcome studies or a study of N of 1, which means a person benefits, a person that's had chronic relentless pain is benefited from a treatment. And we should be curious. We should explore this. We should really do more to find other ways of doing research and helping people heal.
All right. I'm really sorry that we have to stop it there. We've got so many calls and so many other unexplored meridians of thought. But thanks to Michael Kelly, Mary Guerrera, David McCollum, everybody else who helped out with today's show.
Doesn't do that. 2,000 years of working. but it's all claptrap. I've got the traditional Chinese medicine blue.
Oh, that hurts. Dr. Wolf, I didn't think acupuncture was supposed to hurt.
Acupuncture is so last year. This is inacupuncture. You'll feel better when I'm done. They always do.
Oligables!